there, it's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. Tracy Tully here from Tracy Tully Talks, bbsradio.com, and welcome to our schedule today. And our broadcast goes all around the world in the new year 2021, and I welcome you back to listening to Tracy Tully Talks. Our guest today, the beautiful, the absolutely gorgeous Emily Niluan Nli. How are you, Emily?
I am well, thank you, Tracy.
It's great to have you on board. And for our listeners today, Emily was born and educated in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea. And she has six siblings. Is that correct, Emily?
I have three.
Three siblings. Why did I have six?
No, I raised a lot of kids, so that's fine. I've got a girl and two boys.
Girl and two, your brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I raised yes. I look after my brothers and sisters and all this, so yeah, I have three.
A bit of a tribe that you look after.
Thank you.
So tell us, Emily, tell us about life in Port Moresby growing up.
I was born in the village, but when I was a little girl, I was raised in Port Moresby, the capital city of Papua New Guinea. I was raised in a political background. My big sister was married to a politician. So I don't really know much about the culture, the tradition back in the village. I would say I'm a city girl. So Papua New Guinea, it's very, very tough. Women don't speak up, women don't talk, women, they feel that they, I should say we are suppressed and we are oppressed, depressed by our husbands, mm-hmm. with all the lies that are built around. And so many times we accept the lies because we fear, you know, our lives, that we don't want to die. So, I was educated in Moresby, but I went through some very tough situations. So it's a privilege for me to talk to you and share my stories to the world and to Papua New Guinea. If any Papua New Guinea women who are listening, we got to speak up and we got to share our stories. Absolutely. To make a change for everyone in the country, because we feel that we are voiceless, we are hopeless, we are valueless, and we can't speak out. So thank you, Tracy, on behalf of all the women in Papua New Guinea who are going through similar situation that I am in. I want to thank you for the privilege, and I'm so humbled, and it's an honor.
Thank you. And once again, the honour is returned. It's been a wonderful opportunity to sit here and talk with you and our previous discussions. So in our previous discussions, Emily, you were telling me that the males are the ones that rule the roost, so to speak. So they make all the rules and the women have to follow.
In my case, I would say men is above the law. Mm-hmm. There is no law, there is no justice. No. Since 2016, I've been crying for justice, and I'm still crying today. And I hope this interview will have some changes that for the better. And I can say, women, we don't have much. when it comes to seeking justice, when it comes to speaking out. Because men, they are the king. Even though if we marry men with power, that's like, they are the overall boss. We are submitted. We are below everything. Mm-hmm. In my case, I went to the police and I couldn't get help as well. So as you do the interview, I'll tell you my story. So men in Papua New Guinea above the law and above justice.
So it's a tragic story what you're going to share with our listeners today. And our listeners are all over the world, Emily. So absolutely every country that can be reached. And not only are they hearing and seeing you here today, but they will also be able to access you on Spotify and all the major podcast systems and platforms as well. So for our listeners, Emily is the author of a book called Finding Hope in the Midst of Sorrow. And her husband was an ambassador of PNG in the USA. And Emily's story is a very frightening one. And it's about witchcraft, sorcery, and black magic. And it's a modern day story of horrors that exist literally as we speak. So, Emily, who is the person behind Finding Hope in the Midst of Sorrow?
Finding hope in the midst of sorrow, I call it fate. Mm-hmm. And finding hope in the midst of sorrow is God gave me a second chance in life. But this book, I've never dreamt to be an author. But as what life took me, I've decided to pen everything that what happened in my life because I couldn't get justice. Mm. So the person behind that book, it's me. I wrote my life story in that book, hoping that a woman from Papua New Guinea, a woman from the Pacific, a woman from the black countries will read that book and they will find hope in the midst of their sorrow, in the midst of their suffering, in the midst of their pain.
That's very, very important message that you've got there in your book, because I've heard some of it and it's quite shocking. And I don't believe that the average person around the world would be aware of what happens over there in your country, in your home country, to what you're saying and telling us today. So tell us exactly what you do and what prompted you to jump into this journey of helping other women.
All right. I used to be a very successful international businesswoman, very successful. But in my country, once when you are falsely accused of sorcery, witchcraft, and black magic, it is a dead warrant that a woman carries. One way or the other, it doesn't matter how long it takes. Even after 5 years, after 10 years, I will still die. I was accused of sorcery, black magic, and witchcraft. Going back to my previous interview with you, I told you that I was raised in a Seventh-day Adventist home. Mm. I fear God. My mother was the first Adventist. Sorcery and black magic is unheard of, unpracticed, and I don't even go closer. So in 2026, I was accused of black magic. I was accused of sorcery. I was accused of witchcraft. Now, when one woman is accused of witchcraft, black magic, and sorcery, they are either in. I've sent you some photos that
I've seen that.
What women go through. Mm. If you have a chance, you can put it up for people to see. But women are burnt alive. Women are tortured. You know, they are tortured in front of their kids. Yeah. So many women, they go into hiding. They don't speak out because of their children. You know, it will be a torture for the children to say, my mother died because she was accused of sorcery. My mother died because she was accused of witchcraft. When one woman is accused of witchcraft and sorcery, we women are powerless. I lost everything because I couldn't defend myself. I couldn't defend the lies that were thrown on me. I couldn't defend myself to say that I'm not a sorcerer. And I lost everything. Now, there are women that what they do is they bend them alive and they cut their toes, they cut their fingers while women are in pain. And eventually, they would bend them and women die. They buried them alive. The village people, the clan, the tribe, they will not speak out because when they go to help a woman, they will be accused as well. So in fear of their life, the woman is there to face the law herself. The woman fights the battle herself. You know, the woman goes through the pain herself. The husband is powerless if the woman is accused by the tribe. But if the woman is accused by the husband, just imagine the relatives, they bend the woman. And in my case, my husband is a powerful man. He is a king in my tribe, my village. He's an ambassador. So I'm just a helpless, hopeless woman. When an educated man like that speaks to say that my wife, he's a sorcerer, and she practices witchcraft and black magic, who would come to help me? Even one thing in Papua New Guinea, and I want to tell Papua New Guinea and the world, a lot of people are using the church. Are using the church so that when a church is involved, an innocent woman dies for the crime that she does not commit. I am a born Seventh-day Adventist, a second generation Seventh-day Adventist. I couldn't even go to church because the pastors were preaching about me. They were talking about me. All my friends left me. Even today, Tracy, as I speak to you, I'm waiting for even 5 years, 10 years, how long it takes, I will die for a crime that I did not commit. Sorry. And sorry.
That's okay, Emily. We're just going to give you a little break, and I'm going to talk to the listeners while you and take a breath there, because we understand the enormous amount of pressure that you're under representing in your country. At a time where no one else has ever spoken up. And this is a big deal in the world. And you said that your journey started in 2016. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So in 2016, you were accused of sorcery, black magic, and witchcraft. Would you be able to share with our listeners why you were accused of this, or would you prefer not to?
No, I will share. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Thank you for asking me this question. Now, in 2016, I was accused of witchcraft, black magic, and sorcery because my husband wanted to get married to somebody else. Since 2016 up until today, I am psychologically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, I'm broken. 5 years has gone, and one can say that, oh, well, she's not bent, she's not cut, she's not being tortured. Why Emily is still speaking about it? But I want to tell my listeners in Papua New Guinea, this is a torture that will remain in my life for the rest of my life. I carry a dead warrant. I know that after 5 years, I will die. Even if one woman is being accused. So in PNG, when a man wants to get married, the only thing is my wife is a sorcerer. And when my wife is a sorcerer, I can't even stand to explain myself in my tribe, my clan, my relatives, because I am labeled a witch. I am labeled... And they get scared. They get scared to die. So the reason why in 2016 is my husband wanted to get married to somebody else.
Right. And so what he did was, you're saying that he made up these stories to everyone.
Well, I couldn't have done it or planted that thing because I was in Australia. Mm. He was in Papua New Guinea. Mm. He believed in a Seventh-day Adventist pastor's dream. Mm. He said the pastor gave him three dreams.
Yes.
That I was practicing witchcraft. I was a sorcerer.
Yes.
I mean, how can someone believe in this and, you know, at the expenses of my life?
I hear what you're saying, and I hear it very clearly. And as we have spoken previously, I understand it absolutely, because in my book, as you know, I was accused exactly 10 years ago. I was accused by people who were religious or deemed religious, who used their religion to make up stories about me. And one incident in particular, and this is in modern day Australia in southwest Queensland, 10 years ago, and this is real. So what happened was they made up the stories that they had had a dream and they had to get rid of me because their dream told them that they had to get rid of me. And I'm not going to name the church because it's one of those things that religion, they've used religion as a weapon to hurt other people. And it's probably really interesting for you to hear. Here's someone not living very far away from you. I'm only 200 kilometres or 2 hours driving away from you in a modern-day democracy, and exactly the same thing has happened to me in terms of a religious rant, I would call it, a fib, not just a fib, a massive, massive untruth, and blaming someone because it makes someone else feel good, but using religion as a big weapon to bash someone else around. And this is dangerous. This is really dangerous. It's not only dangerous in our country in modern times, and mine was within the education department of Queensland. Really, really dangerous stuff. And obviously, this would be the first time I have ever spoken about it as well. But your country takes it that one step further. Not only do they ostracize you and whatnot, they imprison you and then they torture you and then they kill people by burning them at a stake. This is really, really appalling in every way possible. It's something that I did not know existed until I heard about you and watched you in a conference at the end of last year in an international women's speaking conference. And I was appalled in every aspect. And I knew that I had to speak with you and I had to help you get your story out, as so many other women and men and journalists who hear this story will want to do so as well. So what challenge have you overcome in your journey as a victim accused of witchcraft, sorcery, and black magic in your country? So you told me you returned to PNG and you were incarcerated or in prison. Can you share that with us?
Sure. When you tell me, when you ask me these questions, I think you will do another three or four more, but now we're going to just concentrate on the sorcery.
Yes.
The sorcery, I went back to Papua New Guinea to find out why my husband divorced me, because we've not talked about the divorce. We've not argued about the divorce. I went and dropped him at the airport with a kiss, a goodbye kiss, because he returned to PNG. Mm. I had few work, so I remained in here. Then I received this, divorce application. But anyway, to cut the long story short, I went back to Papua New Guinea to find out why I got divorced. And then I was accused of this sorcery. The first place I ran to was the police. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the police, I could not get justice. I could not even get my name cleared. You know why?
Yeah.
Because he went and saw the people at the higher office, you know, people like the commissioner, or, and I couldn't go up there. He used his title to go and see them. For me, I was only a woman. So this policeman that I went to, he said, oh, sorry, you know, call my name. And he said, sorry, Emily, with my last name. And he said, you know, we can't do this interview because your husband has gone and seen the commissioner. So you come back then. Come back tomorrow. I broke down and I cried. And I came back and I went to the Post Korea and I did a newspaper article.
Yes.
To clear my name because I couldn't get justice. You know, life is very tough out there. And, you know, for them to put fear in me, after 5 years of divorce in 2020, last year, January, I just landed at the airport and the police arrested me for whatever reasons, I don't know. And he took me to the police station. And I said, I am the victim here. Without anything, they detained me in the police station. I stayed in jail. They didn't even charge me. They didn't even arrest me. And I had to bail myself with $600. You know, this is, it's crazy.
It's criminal.
Yeah. Evidence is me and it's my story. It's not theirs. It's not my accusers.
I agree with you there. That's a very powerful statement, Emily, you've just said. This is your story. You live
exactly
in Australia. So you are an Australian resident now. So it is your right to exercise your rights, your democratic rights as an Australian citizen to tell your story. However, when you returned to PNG, Papua New Guinea, they imprisoned you with no allegations.
Nothing, no evidence.
They just grabbed you at the airport.
Yes.
And took you and put you. That would have been really frightening. Absolutely frightening.
I tell you, I collapsed. My bones, they were paralyzed. For what crime did I commit? And, I mean, for a woman like me to go inside the jail, it killed me there. And, you know, I don't think I'll ever go back to Papua New Guinea.
No, and I can understand.
I don't want to be killed because my accusers are there, their relatives are still there, my stories is still there. I mean, if I can go to jail for a crime, and I pleaded and begged with the policeman, can my complainant come? What are the charges? Please, I said, interview us. And you know what he said? Go to the courthouse and, you know, get your justice before a judge. I'm only doing my job. I was locked behind bars for a crime I did not commit. So I started writing my books.
So Emily, you were left in jail and you forfeited all your money to get out of jail. And what did you do then? Did you jump on the plane and get out of there as fast as possible?
No. What I did is I had to ring someone. Well, somebody came and bailed me out. And the next morning, I went to the police station because they didn't get my statement. They didn't interview me, no nothing. So the next day, I went to the police station to give my statement. The policeman was never seen. He disappeared. We rang him. He didn't even answer the phone. I had to engage a lawyer from outside. And then it took a week. As soon as I did the interview and I gave my statement, Tracy, I fled Papua New Guinea. I ran. I took the next flight. I went to the airport. And here I am talking to you.
So you must have been very scared while you were waiting to board the plane.
Oh, I went into hiding. I was hiding. And I'm telling you, I had to pay people to bodyguard me. And we were traveling in six vehicles. Six vehicles. I was traveling in six vehicles to go to the police get my statements done. As soon as I was done, I fled PNG.
Yeah. I notice on your social media you've got a lot of strong followers from PNG. So what risk is it to them to be supporting you from afar via social media?
Well, this is a very good question. And I want to thank you for this question, and I want to thank my God. On the social media from Australia, 12 women have told me their stories. And these are painful stories. Literally, you know, some of them accused of sorceries and are even raped. Some of them, you know, the husband is getting married and the wife didn't know. Some of them, I'm telling you, well, I don't want to say this because I'm being recorded, but yes. You know, high status men, and I'm not calling the offices, but you know what I mean.
I do.
Women who are married to powerful men are telling me that story. They are, and if you see my social media, women who are posting are heartbreaking. After they post, they communicate with me. And they said, Emily, you have changed us to speak. So each woman have asked me to write their books. And I'm starting on two now, really painful. You know, just imagine, when one woman is accused of sorcery, she's powerless to even to defend herself. Men is having affairs with the daughter and the mother at the same time. And when a woman is accused of sorcery, she's powerless to even speak.
So
this is the society that we are in.
So there's two elements there. So one of the elements is the use of a tag of fear, a fear-mongering
tag. And yes.
Using very medieval concepts.
Yes.
Extremely medieval concepts. And
yes.
You know, listeners, we are, you know, in modern, supposed modern day, and these medieval concepts are in and around accusing people of witchcraft, sorcery, and black magic. But also there's another element, and that's the political power. So the political power, as we all know, is huge. It's mammoth. It's enormous. And so you had that, both sides against you, the political power and the accusations, false accusations of witchery, sorcery, and black magic without any evidence whatsoever, no signed statements. Now, isn't it amazing? We were talking earlier, and as you know my story, the same thing happened to me. So I was accused of allegations with zero evidence. Zero evidence. It was a mate's rates. She said, he said, and even a couple of people wrote false diaries. They actually made up false diaries, submitted them, and officers, senior, very high, powerful officers, accepted them. So we can see it's not too far away, really. No, it's abhorrent what they do to women in New Guinea and in terms of the torture. And I've seen those photos, and they're absolutely, absolutely appalling. I'm not going to discuss them here because it really isn't appropriate. But, the listeners can guarantee that it's the worst of the worst that you could see. And so what concerns me is the strength you have got in you to stand up and talk out. I've been speaking up for 10 years here in Australia and on similar levels. And I meet you, and I think we were meant to meet, Emily. We were definitely meant to meet, weren't we? And I meet you and I hear your appalling stories of what's happened, and not just your stories, but you're carrying the baton for other women as well. So you're representing other women in New Guinea, and the fear that they have to suffer, and the torture and the horrors that they put up within their families as well. So tell me, you knew that you we knew that you had a business in Papua New Guinea, and so what happened to your business when you left?
with the sorcery, my business is closed down. I couldn't live in PNG to do it. My life is more important.
Yes.
I think living in Australia, I will speak better to change. You know, one thing, Tracy, my husband is not dead. He accused me in 2016 and he's still living and he's still alive, very healthy.
With another wife? With a new wife?
I don't know about it. I don't want to know about it.
You don't want to know about it either, do you?
No.
And isn't it wonderful that we can have a bit of a giggle too in such a very somber, very serious conversation that we're having? And this is the beauty of women banding together to help each other and get your message out. And I know there's going to be a lot of women that are going to want to contact you and talk to you. So we're going to keep moving. So tell us now, you've told me a tiny, weeny, weeny little bit of some of the horrors that you've experienced, and you're writing a book on it. But what is your proudest moment, Emily? What is the proudest moment in your business accomplishments?
Okay, my proudest moment, regardless of my business, regardless of all the money I have in this world, regardless of my... I've been accused of sorcery. My proudest moment is today.
Today?
It's today. This interview is my proudest moment because I know women are listening.
Good on you.
It's today.
It is today, isn't it? It's a very special
Yes, moment. I've traveled the world. I've dined with, you know, so many wealthy people. But my proudest moment is today.
It's taken a lot for you to come here today. It's taken.
Yes.
It has taken confidence building and discussions to help you get today and face the camera and know that your voice and your story, and it's only a smidgen of your story, is going right out across the world. And that's a huge step.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. And one thing, and this is something that I will take you to my grave. You told me, Emily, it's not about selling your books. It's about telling your stories.
Yes.
And this is what I have done. So the greatest achievement that I have done in the past years and today is me going before the camera, and thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to interview you, because I'm very honored as well. If you were to have a conversation with your younger self, Emily, what would you say to the young Emily?
I would say, be brave and face the world fearless. Be like a lion, no matter what it comes. You know, and I would say, I would not believe in lies and I would not tell lies myself. And I would not accuse somebody for a crime that they did not commit. And I would grow up disciplining myself with this. Because falsely accusing somebody puts someone in the grave. And I walked into the grave. Oh, you haven't had my suicidal, you know, the attempted suicide. It's very sad. So I would say this.
You have suffered greatly in terms of depression and anxiety. And
I'm still on medication.
Yeah, and it's crippled you, literally crippled you, so you couldn't work. And your family over here has helped support you, and they've been a wonderful help. And plus your church, I understand as well, your church, not your church.
Now, my church, from 2016 to 17, I couldn't go. But in 2019, Murray Barracks SDA Church, and if anyone of Murray Barracks SDA Church are listening, I want to thank all of you for your prayers. This church believed in me, and they prayed for me, and they gave the world to me, and they completed my book.
That's wonderful.
So with God, all things are possible. And if any woman are suffering out there, hold on to God. Pray. I went into fasting. I prayed. And I say, faith is my currency to buy blessings in heaven. This interview, my four books, are my blessings in heaven.
I love that term, and I just adore it. And I wrote to you and I said how much that touched me. And just for our listeners, I'm going to repeat what Emily said. She said, faith is my currency to buy blessings in heaven. And that really touched me when you sent a beautiful note thanking me for giving you hope to be a voice for the voiceless. And Emily, I love the fact that this is what we're doing on BBS Radio today and sharing that story for the first time ever in history. You're coming forward and you actually are here with me today. How did the law in Papua New Guinea, how did the law twist around to do this to you? So there was never any legal action in terms of other than the imprisonment, but you didn't end up going to court, did you?
I didn't end up going to court because there's no evidence, there's no statement, there's nothing. The charges are not there too. The provisions are not there too.
No, so that was scary.
I just went into jail.
Yeah, they locked you up to scare
you. To please my accuser, I went to jail.
Ah, so that's a different ball game again, isn't it? To please your accuser, they locked you up. So supporting the accuser to bully you in the most horrific...
Exactly, exactly.
I'm familiar with those types of stories in modern day Australia as well, sadly. So tell me, how did you survive in Australia with a $6 divorce in 2016? How did you do that?
In Papua New Guinea, I couldn't go to church. But in Australia, this is a land of opportunities. Woman, when you speak up in Papua New Guinea, Australia is your home. I got all the support from my church, SDA Church in Australia. And 8 Mile SDA Church, they gave me food, they gave me money, they gave me clothes. They took good care of me. And there is a woman in particular, she's from Africa. Yes. Her name is Tracy. Yes. A house became my hospital. Mm. Oh, jeez. So I got all the support in Australia, not in PNG.
No.
PNG, I'm a dead woman. Mm. So they've supported me. But I didn't want to work. I gave up life. I thought, what's the use of working? I will die anyway, even after 5 years. I carry a death warrant. But last weekend, I met a lady called Tracy Tully, which is you. And she told me, Emily, why are you sleeping? Get out there and work. Be yourself. And I started working last Sunday, and on Wednesday, I will buy my car, so I will have income.
I love that.
I'm working now. After 6 years, 5 years of not working, giving up, just sleeping, getting up because of depression and stress, I didn't want to work. But my first wages I got, I will buy a car. So I'm now employed in my first week. So thank you. Thank you for encouraging me to work and to, you know, give me a hope to look up. So, yes.
Yeah. And that's what we need to do, isn't it? We need to empower each other, and especially women who are marginalized, and to help you. And it was wonderful when you sent me those photos of you working and the big smile on your face. And, of course, understanding, you know, a big part of your journey. And our listeners are only going to hear a little tiny weeny bit of it today, but it's very important for you that you become Emily again.
Thank you.
Now, your name
Thank you.
You have now, is that your family name or is that your the name you were born with? Niliwon
Emily?
Niliwon
yes.
Nili?
Yes, I am born with Niliwon Nili. Nili is my surname.
Yes, Nili is your
surname. So I'm no longer using my husband's name.
No, good. Okay. All right, that's wonderful. So tell me, You have managed to be able to secure a car. For the first time, you're going to get your learner's, your driver's license, or do you still have one?
No, I have a driver's license, but after my divorce,
yes.
You know, everything was gone from my end, cars and everything. So, you know, I gave up hope.
Mm.
Now I'm getting a car on Wednesday, so I'll drive my own car and depression will be gone, stress will be gone. Even the accusation of sorcery, witchcraft, and black magic will be gone.
It's good to hear because
in my mind,
car opens up a lot of life. And I always talk to my clients and I talk to them about traveling on the highway. So you've got to get onto the road first. You've got to help yourself get in the car. And even by just getting in the car doesn't mean that you're going to be able to move forward. You've got to be able to turn on that ignition and you've got to be able to start that car. And then you have to be able to navigate your journey. And that's where you are now. You're learning to navigate in this big world where you're sharing your story with the hope of helping other women. And it won't just be women in New Guinea either, Emily. It will be women in a lot of other countries that will have similar stories.
Yes.
Because we know that, don't we? We know that there are some similar stories around in other countries as well. It's really important you tell us about it. So would you like to share with us now, do you feel comfortable in sharing about how you ended up in the psychiatric ward in Brisbane? Do you feel comfortable talking about that?
Yes, definitely, sure. On the 26th, on the 23rd of March 2020, I was served a surprise divorce paper and I don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
When I woke up, and I don't know how long I was in the hospital too, but when I woke up, I saw doctors were dressed, nurses were there, and two doctors told me, they said, Emily, there is no depression and stress medication. You walk out of here healthy and write your book or you die here. It was a shock that I got. We've never discussed a divorce. I never saw a divorce forthcoming. I lost everything. Everything. And that put me into the hospital. And I was told that an ambulance picked me from my house. So I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But I know I was discharged from a psychiatric hospital.
And you had wonderful doctors and staff there helping, supporting you back on track. You're really fortunate that you flew into Australia, aren't you? Because it really is the best country, isn't it?
Yes. The divorce really didn't take the best of me, but the sorcery killed me and put me in the accusation of sorcery put me in a psychiatric ward. And I wanted to commit suicide as well, knowing that I will die. You know, it's a life-threatening. It's not a good thing.
You said it's a death threat. It's a death warrant, death threat.
Yes, saying. It's a death warrant, yes.
Yeah, and it will hang over your head for some time. Do you think there'll be a time when you'll move on from that fear or not?
After I released my four books, after I published my four books, finding hope in the midst of sorrow is a heartwarming, it's a painful book on its own. After I release that, I think I will go back to Papua New Guinea and be a voice for the voiceless. For now, I will use social media and I'm writing books about women, so that's what I will do.
So you mentioned to me that an article went in the Papua New Guinea newspaper called the Post Courier.
Yes.
Yes, and so that can be found on the internet.
Article. Yes.
So
that's on Post Korea. It's on internet. Yes, they've saw I wrote a book, and you know they published the full. That was last Thursday.
So tell me, they published it last Thursday. The Korea.
Yes.
Oh really?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Right. So tell me, what would happen to the newspaper owner and the journalist?
In 2016, I did a newspaper article. And the reporter is no longer working there with Post Korea article because he just got frightened.
I bet he did.
And he left. Like, you know, in Papua New Guinea, politically, it's just, it's worse. You know, everything, culture, tradition, everything, you know. So he left. He's no longer working there. So they did this one again on Thursday. So I don't know what will happen here. I'm here and they did it. So, yeah.
So they've obviously feeling strong enough that they have published your article.
Yes. Mainly it's about the book, the sorcery, and I think they did the best thing. From Thursday, I'm getting, women are sending me messages after messages. Even at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, when they have a problem with their husband, they are telling me things. And I said, I'm in Australia. I can't do much. You know, I only pray with them. Mm. So they are really finding hope in the midst of sorrow with my book. So just the title, but they are getting somewhere. The book is giving them hope already just by the cover.
And that's pretty exciting, isn't it? That's being an author, I understand. I understand the feeling of having to unpack it all because it took me much longer than I thought to unpack my story of horror. And then, of course, it went to the solicitor who made me rewrite it because he said to me, there will be retribution. Someone will come after you and they will hurt you. And you know they will. You know who they are and you know they will do it. And I said, yes, I do. He said, well, you need to rewrite it and you need to make sure that there's no reference to them because they will, because they're that bad. Those people are that bad that they will come for you. So, you know, this is something that I understand when you write your book that you have to rethink it all. You have to relive it all again, don't you? The feelings of dread and the adrenaline in your mouth and the feelings, as you describe, your legs don't want to hurt. It's not good. But on the other hand, when you finish your book, I hope you get what I got, and that's immense feeling of relief and the incredible feeling of relief that it's over, that the story is out, and it's almost like a pat on the back to say you did it. You crossed the threshold with that baton and you now represent women. So you're almost there, aren't you? Now tell me, if people want to get hold of you, because there will be people listening everywhere in the world, can you tell us how can they find you?
Okay. I want to just say I wrote this book in 2016.
Yes.
I'm telling you all the negative things that you can think of.
Oh, yeah.
I put it in that book.
Oh, happy.
But
now.
It took me 4 years to rewrite that book again.
Yes.
This time I'm talking about God, I'm talking about women, I'm advising how to be strong. So the book is a total new chapter, new book from 2016.
So it's going to be very liberating for you.
Nothing negative. Everything is no names are mentioned. It's just a book about women. You'll enjoy it.
I will. And I hear what you're saying, because the journey is the journey is finding your new self, your new life, coming out of the horror and then coming into the light and into a beautiful country like Australia, and where you're surrounded by beautiful, supportive people, your religion, your friends. Yes. The people you will meet, networking, and I understand you're very keen to start a business to help other people.
Yes.
That's exciting.
I will get into business again. That I won't put it on record. I'll send you a text what business I want to do.
Oh, can't wait. And I do know for a fact that you are a speaker in March, in the International Women's Conference in March, which is very exciting, and that's almost ready to be advertised. It's had a last meeting with some US business partners this morning. And so that's going to be a wonderful place for you, a lovely platform to share.
Thank you.
Probably in a more personal way, whereas you're feeling probably very vulnerable. This is the first time that you allowed yourself to be seen.
Yes.
And shared your story, and it's only a little tiny bit. Which is your favourite chapter in the book?
All of them.
All of them. Yeah.
All of them. Because each of them has a story. Nothing is favorite to me. Each of them will change a mother. Yeah. Each of them are voiceless, voice for the voiceless. So each of them has a chapter on its own.
Yeah. So tell me, how do your kids feel about this? How do your children feel? Because they're adults, children.
The books, you know, every time they would hold me when I cry.
Yeah.
And they said, Mom, you'll get your justice. They are very supportive and they are looking forward to read my book. And they said, Mom, give us the draft and we see it. And I said, no.
Good.
I said, no. So no one has read the draft, seen, I think, just one person that I've given. She's an author as well. And, yeah, it's a good book.
It is a good book. It sounds like a good book. I can't wait to read it. And it's interesting. It's my children the same and my husband that supported me very strongly in my book. But I had to write my book, and I'm sure you're feeling the same, as a legacy for all the future.
Yes.
The future people.
Yes.
And also to make sure that the real story, the real story, or most of the story, because I can imagine there's some you can't say, just like there's some I can't say, sadly, because I'd love to say it's real. However, it's a good start. And I use the hashtag digital damage, because that's what people did to me. They tried to decimate or ruin my children's lives and my husband's life and career and my own, and with their silly rubbish, absolute garbage, because they felt like they were somebody and they had egos and they were able to. And really it was a witch hunt. So I had a modern day witch hunt, well and truly a modern day witch hunt, and you would know what that would feel like. And when you start having people buy into a witch hunt using religion and politics, it's a dangerous mix, isn't it? So digital damage, hashtag digital damage is what I use to defy the traditions and the conventions of these people who think that they can use their current laws to get away with whatever they want. And I've actually called in my book, and I suggest you do the same, Emily, I've actually called for a class action in the back of my book. And that's a powerful, powerful page in my book, because I have all the evidence. And that's what no one else has.
You have
the evidence and no one else has.
Thank you.
So, as you know, we can keep talking for a long time, and you will be back here, but I can't wait to come and see you in person and meet you in Brisbane. You're not far away. It's
great
to hear that you're getting a car, and I hope you send me a photo.
I will.
You with your new car. That'd be lovely. And I look forward to following your journey, and I know our listeners will, and you'll be back on Tracy Tully Talks again to share more of your journey. And I'm very keen to watch you and support you and help empower you and lift you when it comes to rising up and getting your business up and going, because that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort.
Thank you.
Anyone listening today who has any ability to support and help Emily in this journey, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it, Emily?
So I would deeply appreciate this, and thank you.
Thank you. So would you be able to actually, do you mind if I say your email address online? Are you able to?
Yes.
Thank you. So if you want to find Emily, Nilly One Nilly, you can find her on her Facebook page, and her Facebook page is your personal page.
Emily Nilly One Nilly.
Okay, so I'm going to spell that. So Emily is capital E-M-I-L-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Second is Nilly One, N-I-L-I-W-A-N. And the third word is Nilly, N-I-L-I. So you'll be able to find that on my Facebook as well, and you'll be able to see my posts advertising, and you'll be able to track down Emily. Now, you also have been in the PNG fashionable clothing businesses prior to all this happening.
Yes.
Is that one of your outfits that you're wearing now?
Right now is I don't want to have anything to do with PNG, so
that's okay.
Yeah, I don't want to do business. No. I might, but not now.
Yeah, I think your
fear my life, so yeah. I don't want to.
Yeah. I hear you as your service is to help other women, and that's a wonderful opportunity for you to help transform lives. And yeah, that's your passion.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Emily, I'm going to have to do a wrap now. So I'd like to thank you for coming here today and talking to me. I look forward to interviewing you again. I look forward to meeting you and also listening to you in March at the International Women's Conference with Seth. Thanks to our listeners for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talks. And on Tracy Tully Talks with bbsradio.com. I'd love you to tune in every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. at the moment, Australian time AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. You can contact me via my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. No E's in anywhere. Now, once you get on that page, scroll down to the bottom of the page and leave a message for me. And if you're interested in lifting your profile, your presence, or your profit with your business, we have affordable sponsorship opportunities for you as well. So until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Emily. And have a beautiful week. And we look forward to meeting you again. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence, and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.